Well, good evening. It's good to be back with you all. This morning, Beck and I were in Pampa, Texas. They asked us to come back, so must not have been too horrible the first time we were there. But it's good to be back with you all. We've got some important things to talk about tonight. We've already done some very important things in our worship to the Lord. And I'm glad that you participated in that, and I hope you participate in the study that we're about ready to go through, because it's one that's going to affect all of us. So if you would, go ahead and open up to Genesis, the sixth chapter. Genesis, the sixth chapter. We'll be looking at that in just a second. Before we look at that, I want to talk about two different things as a reminder. It was mentioned in the announcements this morning, or in this evening, that tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock, the character Bible study, we took a month off in July. We're going to pick that back up tomorrow night, and Kyle's going to be doing a lesson on Mary and Joseph. It's going to be a great lesson, I'm sure, and we can all benefit from it, so I encourage you all to be there for that. I also encourage any of the young people, all of the young people, to remind their parents that this Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday is going to be the youth lectureship at Milwaukee Avenue in Lubbock, Texas. Don't let them forget that, because the things that we're going to be talking about there going to be of vital importance to young Christians, how to have a great relationship with God, how to have a great relationship with the opposite sex, how to have a great relationship with the people around us and in every aspect of our lives. It's going to be a great study, and you're going to want to be there, and you're going to regret not being there. All right. Well, let's go ahead and get into it. Before we look at Genesis, the sixth chapter, I want to read a passage from Hebrews, the 11th chapter. Hebrews, the 11th chapter and verse 7. You don't have to turn over there with me, but just read or listen along with me. By faith, Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen, and moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household, by which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness, which is according to faith. Occasionally, someone will ask me how I come up with sermon ideas, and I normally tell them one of three ways, a number of different things, how I come up with any of my sermons. Some of the sermons are a result of what I believe the church needs to hear and what I believe is important after reading the Bible, and things that I think that the church needs to hear in order to be encouraged to do the will of the Lord. And others, other sermons are a result of daily Bible study, the daily Bible reading that the elders have encouraged us to be have encouraged us to do over the past year. And then there are some sermons that come from just someone saying, hey, why don't you do a sermon on this? Well, a couple of months ago, I was at Starbucks waiting for Becca to get off work when I started talking to one of her coworkers, Justin, who is incidentally here with us, by the way, this evening. He's a real nice guy, and Justin, they won't bite, so it's okay if you all meet. But anyway, we were talking, and He asked me where I come up with my sermon ideas, and I told him. And that's when he asked me, well, have you ever thought about doing a sermon on Noah's work ethic? He said, I think that would be a really good idea. I thought about it for a moment, and I thought, yeah, that would be a really good idea. I mean, Noah is one of the most purpose-driven people in the whole Bible. He is a great example of what a worker of the Lord really is, and definitely he is someone that we should imitate when we put our hands to the plow in our jobs and at school and in our relationships, and most especially to our devotion to God. And really, there's just so much that we can learn from the work ethic Noah showed while building the ark. And so this is where this morning's lesson comes from. We're going to be looking at Noah's work ethic. And we're going to talk about some very important things tonight. So go ahead and pull out your Bibles if you haven't already and open them up to Genesis, the sixth chapter. And let's get into it. In Genesis, the sixth chapter, starting in verse 1, let's read the first 8 verses. Now it came to pass, when the men began to multiply on the face of the earth, and daughters were born to them, that the sons of God saw that the daughters of men, that they were beautiful, and they took wives for themselves of all whom they chose. And the Lord said, my spirit shall not strive with man forever, for he is indeed flesh. Yet his days shall be numbered 120 years. There were giants on the earth in those days, and also afterwards, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men, and they bore children to them. Those were the mighty men of old, men of renown. Then the Lord, notice verse 5, then the Lord saw
that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord was sorry that he made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. So the Lord said, I will destroy man, whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, creeping things and birds of the air, for I am sorry that I have made them. But notice verse 8, but Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. In verses 1 through 8, this sets up the biblical account for Noah, or for the story of the flood for Noah's life. And what we see in this, verses 1 through 6, is that the world is in horrible shape. The world is in a horrible, horrible shape. Just a few chapters earlier in Genesis 1 and 2, we see that after God makes something, he calls it good. He calls the earth and the trees and the skies and the seas and all those other wonderful things, he calls those good. He calls man and woman very good. And yet, just a few chapters later, God is sorry that he made man, because he has become so wicked. So much so that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. You know, we may meet somebody who has given themselves over completely to being evil, to a debased mind, to being just purely serving themselves. We may meet one person that is purely evil. And please understand what I mean by that. But in the time of Noah, the whole world was thinking only evil thoughts continually. They were so wicked that God was sorry that he had made man, and it grieved him in his spirit. It was so bad that God decided to destroy man and start all over. And he was going to start all over with a man named Noah. In Genesis, the 6th chapter, verse 9, read with me, verse 9, and we'll find out what kind of person this Noah was. In verse 9, this is the genealogy of Noah. Noah was a just man, perfect in his generations. Noah walked with God. We see what kind of person Noah was. Noah was a just man. He was someone who was morally upright and faithful unto God. That nothing was going to change that about him. He was someone who was perfect in his generations, meaning that he was a man of great integrity. That's what that phrase means, that he was a man of great integrity. When all the world was doing whatever they wanted to do, only evil things, Noah firmly adhered himself to the moral code which God had given man since the beginning. Not to murder, not to lie, not to cheat, but to worship God and to serve him and to walk with him continually. And in essence, he was a man who walked with God, as the Bible says Adam did while he was in the garden, and while Enoch did while he was on the earth. And he had a friendly fellowship with God in doing his will. It was because Noah was this type of person that God came to him and spoke to him about this very important matter, about the destruction of the earth. And in Genesis, the 6th chapter, verses 13 through 21, read with that with me. And we'll see for what purpose God noticed Noah, 13 through 21. And God said to Noah, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Make yourself an ark of gopher wood. Make rooms in the ark and cover it inside and outside with pitch. And this is how you shall make it. The length of the ark shall be 300 cubits, and its width 50 cubits, and its height 30 cubits. And you shall make a window for the ark, and you shall finish it to a cubit from above, and set the door of the ark in its side. And you shall make it with the lower deck, second and third decks. And behold, I myself am bringing the flood waters on the earth to destroy from under heaven all flesh in which there is breath of life. Everything that is on the earth shall die. But I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall go into the ark, you and your sons, and your wife and your sons' wives with you. And of every living thing of flesh, you shall bring two of every sort into the ark, to keep them alive with you, and shall be male and female. Of the birds of the birds after their kind, of the animals after their kind, and of every creeping thing of the earth after its kind. Two of every kind will come to you to keep them alive. Verse 21, And you shall take for yourself of all the food that is eaten, and you shall gather it to yourself, and it shall be food for you and for them. In verses 13 through 21, we see the purpose that God had noticed Noah. God told Noah that he was going to destroy the world due to its incredible wickedness with a great flood, that he was going to bring the floodwaters to destroy it. However, he was going to save Noah and his family and establish his covenant with them if Noah did what God commanded him. And in verse 22, we find out Noah's response to God's offer. In verse 22, it says, "Thus Noah did according to all that God commanded him, so he did." After the construction of the ark was completed some 100 years later, God gave Noah 7 days to fill the ark with 7 of each clean animal and 2 of each unclean animal before he flooded the world. And also notice that in this section, what God says of Noah. In verse 1, he says to Noah that you are righteous before me. And in verse 5, he says, Noah did according to all that the Lord commanded him. And starting in chapter 7, verse 11, we see the rest of the story. That as they went in, God sealed up the ark, and they went, and God brought down the floods and opened up the bottoms of the sea and opened up the windows of the heaven, and it rained for 40 days and 40 nights. And the water remained on the earth for 150 days, and after the appointed time, the waters receded, and God allowed them to come out to walk on land again after being in the ark for those 150 days. And in Genesis, the 8th chapter, in verses 13 through 19, the ark was vacated, and Noah and his family and all the animals went out to fill the earth. And because Noah had done all that God commanded, he made a covenant with Noah, as he said he would. In Genesis, the 8th chapter, verses 20 through 9, 17, we see that God fulfills his promise to make a covenant with with Noah and his family. You know, there are so many wonderful lessons that we can learn from the Bible's account of Noah and the flood. However, for the rest of our time today, I want us to focus on just 3 things in regard to Noah's work ethic, in which we need to learn and apply it to our lives in the workplace and in school, in our relationships at home and in our service to God. And the first thing that I think that we need to notice, the first thing that we need to make a part of our lives, or first thing that we need to notice about Noah's life, Noah's work ethic, and that we need to make a part of our lives, is that Noah did all that the Lord commanded him to do. This phrase or idea comes up several times in this passage in Genesis, the 6th, 7th, and 8th, and 9th chapters, that Noah did all that the Lord commanded him. When God said to build an ark, that is exactly what he did. When God said to load up his family, all the animals and provisions for the trip, that's what he did. When God said to come out of the ark and fill the earth, that is what he did. And in fact, even before the whole ordeal with the ark, Noah did all that the Lord commanded him to do. In chapter 6, verse 9, we see that Noah walked with God. So much so that in verse 8, that he found grace in the eyes of the Lord. We'll talk about that in just a little while. But this is the type of person he was. This is just the type of person that he was. It's important for us to note that he didn't just do it, but he did it the way that the Lord had commanded him to. It could have been very easy for Noah to say, okay, Lord, I know that I'm going to build this giant boat for you. I know that I'm going to do this. But I have some creative revisions that I want to make. I want to put a shuffleboard in over here, and I want to put the barbecue pit over next to the pigs. I think that's a good plan. And, you know, this pitching it inside and outside, that's going to get messy. So how about we just do it on the outside instead? He could have made any of those changes. He could have said any of those things. It would have been very easy for him to justify it in his mind for him to do that. However, he didn't. Because he was a just man, a man of integrity, Someone who walked with God. Not out in front of Him or behind Him, but with Him. And this is the first lesson that we need to learn. We need to do what we're told the way... We need to do what we're told the way we're told to do it. In the workplace, when we're given an assignment, we need to do it as if the Lord Himself had given us that assignment, because in all intents and purposes, He has. If you would turn over to Ephesians the 6th chapter. I know we could look at a number of different passages, but I just like this one a whole lot. Starting in verse 5, read with me Ephesians 6 verse 5. Bondservants, be obedient to those who are your masters, according to the flesh, with fear and trembling and sincerity of heart, as to Christ. Not with eye service as men pleasers, but as bondservants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will doing service as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatever good anyone does, he will receive the same from the Lord, whether he is slave or free. We need to understand that our service to the company and to our boss really isn't that. Our service is to God. That it doesn't matter if our boss is a jerk or making unreasonable claims. It doesn't matter any of that stuff. If our boss says to do that, then that is what we need to do, whether we agree with it or not. Because God has blessed us with that job. He has put that person in the place of authority over us. And we need to obey them just as we would God. So when we're given assignment, we need to do the task the same way as if God had told us directly to do it. And the same goes for our schoolwork, kids. When the teacher gives an assignment, we need to treat it the same way as if God had given us that assignment. If the teacher asks for a 1,000-word essay in Times New Roman type or 12-point fonts on World War II to be turned in on next Tuesday, that's exactly what we need to do. We don't need to make revisions. We don't need to make changes. We don't need to ask the question, well, I wonder if the teacher's going to be okay if I do it in 10-point type or more to the point, 16-point type. We don't need to ask those questions. We need to do it the way that he says, or the way that the teacher says to do it, just as if God had told us to do it. And in the home, when parents give their children a chore to do, they need to do it the way they know they should do it, in the time frame given. And it goes the same for our worship to God. Because everything that we do should be worship to God. When God says that we are to come together on the first day of the week to partake of the Lord's Supper and to give our means, that is what we need to do. When He says that we are to come together to worship Him and to stir each other up to loving, to good works, by singing psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, praying with each other with praise and thanksgiving, reading, studying, and meditating upon His Word on the first day of the week, all throughout every day of our lives, then that's what we need to do. This is the first lesson that we need to learn from Noah and his work ethic. That when someone in authority over us says to do something, that is what we need to do. And especially when it comes to our devotion to the Lord. That if God tells us something, we need to listen to Him. Second thing that we need to understand about Noah's life, or about Noah's work ethic, is that Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. We've already talked a little bit about this, about how Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. He found it because he was a just man. He was a man of integrity, a man who walked with the Lord according to Genesis 6:8. And basically, that meant that he was a good person, a good enough person for God to notice him in that wicked world. And I'm pretty sure that that didn't change while he was building the ark or during the flood or even after that. That was just the type of person he was. And I'm pretty sure that this was the type of person he was and that was the type of person he was going to be. And this is really the second lesson that we need to learn, that we need to be the same type of people. A just people of integrity, walking with God through every aspect of our lives. That we have a good reputation. In Proverbs, the 22nd chapter, if you would turn over there, Proverbs, the 22nd chapter, and read with me verse 1. We'll find what the proverb writer has to say about a good name. Proverbs 22 and verse 1.
There we go.
A good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, and loving favor rather than the silver and gold. A good name, a good reputation is something that is precious. It is something that money just cannot buy. It is something above money, intrinsic value. It is something that is so valuable. It is something that we need to strive for. Something that Noah had in his service to the Lord. It's something that we need to have. We need to have that good reputation. In the workplace, our conduct needs to be above reproach. Understanding that our character is of vital importance to our job. I'll tell you this story from the time that I was working at Home of the Innocents. For those of you who don't know or don't remember, Home of the Innocents, I worked there when I was back in Kentucky. It was a treatment facility for abused and abandoned children. And these children would have a lot of emotional and mental problems due to physical and emotional and other types of abuse. There was a teenage girl once that accused a coworker of mine of doing something that was, one, very illegal, two, very disgusting, and three, something that he would never do, something that he didn't and would never do. And our boss and her social worker and both of their bosses all recognized that this was a false accusation and responded accordingly. They understood that it was a false accusation partially because she had done that same thing in every facility she had been in. However, mostly, they knew it was a false accusation because they knew what kind of person Brandon was. He was someone who understood Proverbs 22:1, that a good name is above, worth more than anything, worth more than silver or gold, is above anything. In Ecclesiastes 7, verse 1, the preacher Solomon has this to say. He says that it is above pure ointment of perfume, better than sweet-smelling perfume. It is so incredibly valuable. And my point is this, that in the workplace, we need to have that good reputation. That when false accusations come against us, whether they're of that nature or whether they're of some other nature, that people know that they're false accusations because we are honest and responsible and accountable and reliable and professional people on the job. We need to be people who are above any type of reproach. And the same goes for our time in school. If we're accused of cheating on a test, our character needs to be above that reproach to the point where people know that is a false accusation. And in the home, it's the same thing. If people accuse us of cheating on our spouses, or beating our kids, our conduct needs to be, and our conduct and reputation needs to be above that reproach, to the point where people know that this is a false accusation and an unfounded lie. And especially in our devotion to God, our conduct needs to be above reproach. In Matthew the 5th chapter, turn over with me to Matthew the 5th chapter, and read with me verse 14. Jesus says this on the Sermon on the Mount, after he just finished speaking about the Beatitudes, the attitudes that we are supposed to be like, or that we are supposed to have. He says this in verse 14, to give us an example of who we are to be, or who we are to be. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Here Jesus gives us an example for us to imitate, that we are to be the light of the world in this darkness. That we are to be a city set upon a hill that cannot be hidden, that is easily seen. Our goodness and our holiness and our righteousness and our godliness need to shine through the darkness of the sinful world so brightly that it is seen by all to the point where we cannot be hidden. That cannot be hidden by any false accusation. In the workplace or in anything. We need to find grace in the eyes of the people at work and in the eyes of people at school and at home, and especially in the eyes of the Lord. We need to have that good reputation that comes from hard work, that comes from honesty, that Noah had. One final thing that we need to notice about Noah's work ethic is that Noah did all of this through much suffering. Have you ever given any thought to how much Noah suffered in building the ark? Sure, there's the physical suffering of being a 500-year-old man building a giant boat while making his own materials for 100 years. I mean, that would definitely take a physical toll on you. You know, the brother of a friend of mine back home makes his own canoes. And despite Rob's ability and proficiency in doing that, he still comes out every time battered and bruised. And he's hammered his thumb a couple of times. He's got splinters all over the place. You know, that's hard work just building a two-man canoe for him. Imagine building an ark of this size all by yourself. And that's something else. Imagine all of the ridicule he faced while doing the will of the Lord and building this giant boat so far from shore, because even though it never rained before, it was going to rain so hard that the entire world was going to be flooded and destroy everything. The whole world was so incredibly wicked that God was going to destroy the world because of it. And here he was, building this ark by himself. We don't know if he had any help from his family, but we know that he built the ark. And it took him at least, or around 100 years, I'm supposing, to do that. You know, if you want to talk about being alone, Noah was alone. In First Kings, the 19th chapter, verse 14, the great prophet Elijah cried out to God that he alone was left, that he should just go ahead, God should just go ahead and take him. But no, God showed Elijah that no, he was not alone. However, with Noah, with the whole rest of the world being only evil continually, if anybody was ever alone in this world, it was Noah. How much ridicule did that righteous man have to suffer at the hands of those wicked people? And yet, maybe the most suffering Noah faced was on the ark itself. This man, Noah, was a preacher of righteousness who walked with God every day of his life only to save 8 souls, including himself. He was a preacher of righteousness. You know, I know the heartache that comes from teaching someone the gospel and watching them reject it. And that awareness has become even more acutely pointed since I began preaching full time. I can't imagine preaching for 100 years and only reaching my family. I can't even begin to imagine how many tears Noah shed for those lost souls, some of which were his brothers and his sisters and his nieces and nephews and people that he was close to, his friends. I can't imagine how heavy that hammer must have felt, knowing that every nail in the ark was another nail in the lost soul's coffin. He suffered a lot. But he did it because he was focused on serving God first and foremost. He had faith that God was true to his word, that God was going to destroy the world, that God was going to establish a covenant with him, that God did have some greater plan for mankind to come in the future. He did it because he was focused on heaven. This is the third lesson that we need to learn, that we must learn. We must learn to persevere through all of the hardship and heartache. In James, the first chapter, turn over with me to James, the first chapter. We'll find out what James has to say about trials and tribulations. In James, the first chapter, in verse 2, James says this, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience." There is a purpose in these trials. There is a purpose in these sufferings, that we may become perfected, that we may be purified in serving the Lord. And our focus must not be on how hard it is for us in these times, but on how much God loves us. And how hard it must be for him to watch people time and time again reject the gospel at every turn, to become more and more wicked with every passing day. How hard it must be for God to look at them and to know on what side of the judgment they're going to end up on. In the workplace, we mustn't focus on how hard it is for us or complain about the job that God has so richly blessed us with. Instead, we must focus on why we're doing this. 1 Corinthians, the 10th chapter, verse 31. We must note that we must do all things for the glory of God. all things for the glory of God. And in our workplace, we need to understand that what we're doing in our jobs is to glorify God so that others will see God glorified in us. The same thing goes for our time in school. When we get ridiculed for not swearing or not being sexually promiscuous or understanding that the assembly together for worship on Sunday and Wednesday and any other time are more important than sports events or school functions or whatever else, we need to remember why we're doing it. Because we love the Lord and we want to glorify Him. And in the home, we must keep this in our minds and not complain when our parents teach us or try and teach us and tell us things. And most especially in our devotion to God, we must never waver or stumble due to physical or emotional suffering. We must stick through it and we must persevere. We must do it to glorify God and we must do it to make our election sure, as Peter says in 2 Peter the 1st chapter and verse 10. And we must do it to receive the crown of righteousness, the crown of life, which is laid up for us in heaven. If you would, turn over to Revelation the 2nd chapter. Revelation the 2nd chapter and read with me what Jesus says to the church in Smyrna. In verse 10, "Do not fear any of those things which you are about to suffer. Indeed, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison, that you may be tested, and you will have tribulation 10 days. But be faithful until death, and I will give you the crown of life." This is a lesson we must learn if we are to be pleasing to God, if we are to find grace in the eyes of the Lord. I know this went a little longer than we're used to, but I know it was time well spent. We need to always remember that we must strive to remember the example of Noah and Noah's work ethic. And let us strive to have the same work ethic in our own lives. Let us do all that the Lord has commanded us to do in the way that He has commanded us to do it. And let us find grace in the eyes of the Lord by being a just people of integrity, always walking with God. And let us suffer through all of the trials and stand in the way of our goal, heaven. But count it all joy that we are suffering for the Lord. If you would, let us finish with one last passage. Hebrews the 12th chapter. Hebrews the 12th chapter, verses 1 and 2. Hebrews 12, verses 1 and 2. "Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before Him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God." Friends, no matter what we suffer in this life, no matter what the Lord commands of us, no matter what people think of our reputation, we must understand, we must always keep our focus on the goal of heaven. That in all aspects of our lives, in the workplace, in the school, in the home, and especially in our devotion to God, that we do these things that we talked about tonight in every aspect of our lives in order that we might focus and win the race that is set before us. Hopefully something that has been said here tonight that encourages you to serve God better. I encourage you to serve God better as much as I possibly can. And if that means starting on that walk by being baptized into His blood, His precious redeeming blood, then now is the time that we have set aside for you to take advantage of that gospel opportunity, of that gospel invitation. So why don't you do so, even right now, as we stand and as we sing.